A job with the U.S. Postal Service used to represent a steady paycheck with solid benefits. And for many, particularly those coming from economically disadvantaged neighborhoods, it was the job guaranteeing a pathway into America's middle class. But things have now changed, partly due to technology and the struggling economy. And as a result, the Postal Service is considering cutting 120,000 jobs. The plan also calls for big changes to health benefits and retirement plans. Here to talk more about this are Philip Rubio, assistant professor of history at North Carolina A&T University and a former postal worker. Also joining us is Jimmy Maynor. He worked as a postal worker for nearly four decades and currently serves as executive vice president for a local branch of the National Association of Letter Carriers, a union that represents postal workers in North Carolina. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Jimmy,
thanks, Tony, for having us.
I'm going to begin with you. You started off working for the Postal Service in the early 1970s. Why did you go there, and what did it do to and for your life?
Well, I'd gotten out of the military and taken the postal exam, and I was actually going back to school at night school here at North Carolina Central, and I got an invitation to come to the postal office, and so I came in April 14, 1973, and I stayed until December 31st, 2010.
Do you think a lot of black people and others actually think that getting a job at the post office was a really good job or the best job that they could get at the time?
Absolutely. No doubt about that.
Philip, you worked for the post office for a number of years, and then you left, and now you have begun to research it. What is your concern about the proposed reduction in service and staffing with the post office?
Well, there's no doubt that it could cripple the post office, and it could cripple the universal service, which is the original mission of the post office going back over two centuries, but also removing those jobs that Jimmy mentioned, the job that I enjoyed from 1980 to 2000 that helped propel my family into the middle class, and most importantly, to provide service everywhere at a relatively low cost.
Well, you know, a number of industries have downsized, particularly manufacturing. And while the post office was certainly an entree into the middle class for a number of people, times have changed. There is new technology now that replaces some of what the post office used to provide. Speak to both of you, if you can. You first, Philip. Do we need the post office the way we used to need it?
I think we do. And, you know, the post office has adapted over the years. In the late 19th century, people predicted the demise of the Postal Service because of the telephone and with a fax machine in the 1950s. The Internet has been a challenge, but the post office is picking up new things. For instance, last-mile delivery, taking over when packages that are shipped UPS or FedEx. And we still go to every home and every business in this country. So even if your Internet service provider shuts down, the post office is still there to deliver your mail to a government-protected mailbox. And in fact, 28% of Americans do not have Internet access. So there's still a lot of people relying on the Postal Service. The Postal Service has also kept up with technology. Automation has increased the speed of the mail.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More. I'm Tony Cox, and we are speaking with former postal workers Jimmy Maynor and Philip Rubio about the proposal to cut 120,000 Postal Service jobs. Jimmy, from a union point of view, what do you think the union could do, give back, if that's the right way to say it, to keep the post office from having to make these cuts?
Okay. First of all, Tony, in 2006, Congress mandated the Postal Service to pre-fund future health care retirees' benefits for 75 years and to do so within 10 years. And if you look at the bottom line, the post office actually had a net operating revenue without this onerous burden, which amounts to 7 to 10% of our budget each year. And additionally, the Postal Service has overpaid both retirement accounts, for FERS and civil service retirements, anywhere from $50 to $70 billion. And we're just asking Congress, we're not asking to pay the money back to us, just give us credit for that money. And if you go back to 2006, this has only been a problem since 2006, since the Postal Act that created this burden on us to pay $5.5 billion per year off the top to fund future retirees' health benefit plans.
Philip, let me bring the last question to you because our time has run out. What do you see the future of the post office, briefly, 5 years from today?
Oh, well, the post office has got to get through these scare tactics that unnecessarily are laying people off or proposing laying people off, essentially breaking the union by getting rid of the no layoff clause and eliminating health care benefits and switching to cheaper plans. Closing post offices, I know people are upset about that all over the country. I think it's going to take a lot of people waking up and getting the facts. Just to piggyback on what Jimmy said, a lot of people don't know, some don't want to know, that the post office has actually turned a profit in the last 4 years, even through the recession. So it's only those pre-fund mandates that Jimmy talked about that caused the post office to be so far in the hole, because otherwise they've turned a profit of $837 million in the last 4 years, $226 million in the last quarter. Now, that's not a hefty sum, you could say, but the post office's mission is universal service and to be self-supporting. It could do that if legislation went through Congress right now. Stephen Lynch, the Democrat from Massachusetts, has proposed it, H.R. 1351, that would allow the post office to use surplus from its pension plans to pre-fund those benefits and not have to take it out of operating expenses, because the post office actually still is a going concern. It's a myth that it's a dinosaur and that it's, you know, going to that it should inevitably fall apart.
We'll leave it right there. Philip Rubio, assistant professor of history at North Carolina A&T University and a former postal worker. Jimmy Maynor serves as executive vice president of a branch of the National Association of Letter Carriers based in Durham, North Carolina. He, too, is a former postal worker. They both joined us from member station WNCU in Durham, North Carolina. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Tony.